Well, weak in heart or mind? If so, maybe tonight's not your night to listen. In a moment, we'll be talking about the web bots, George Ure, Cliff High, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Tonight, we're going to talk about the future, your future, and some of your past as well, and some of all of our past. Two guests tonight, George Ure, business consultant, financial writer, publishing UrbanSurvival.com, IndependenceJournal.com, and PeopleNomics.com. He's an advisor and a consultant with Cliff High. Cliff, of course, has a patent on the computer-assisted reading technology, which allows reading from computer screens at up to 2,000 words per minute, reaching into other areas of hidden potential within language used by humans. He has been developing a system of software internet agents, they're kind of like search engines, that use proprietary processing methods to predict future events. The software project began 1997, capturing near real-time changes in language patterns within internet discussions. Then, employing radical linguistic techniques of his own, he develops a model which anticipates future events with some seeming accuracy. Here they both are. Here's George. Here's Cliff. Hey, George, how are you?
Top of the morning to you, George.
Always
a
pleasure.
Things are great out here in the East Texas Outback.
Super. And Cliff, how about you?
Doing fine here in the Pacific Northwest. Great, it's a beautiful evening.
Great to have you both back on the program. We'll talk about some of the past, and we'll look into the future over the next 3 hours that we've got both of you. Lots of new listeners. They're saying, web bots, what are they talking about? Are these little insects? What are they? So let's start with you, George. Just give us an overview of Cliff's work and what web bot technology is.
Well, the essence of the technology is back in 1997, Cliff began looking at future developments of stock prices as it related to discussions on the internet about various companies. The idea was to pick out some highs in stock prices using language. However, as it evolved, it started showing some indications about future events happening as well. And in about June of 2001, Cliff and I started extensive correspondence, and he sent me some notes that went to the effect, and you can still read it on the Urban Survival website archives, saying that in the next 90 days from about June 1st of 2001, we would reach what was described as a tipping point, something with aspects of military and accident would occur that would forever change life as we know it. And following that, there would be other developments, such as restrictions on travel. And one thing led to another, and I woke up the morning of 9/11 and went, holy smokes,
yeah,
this is a tipping point.
Absolutely. And Cliff, when that happened, that tragic day, did you think back at what you were saying and predicting and interpreting?
I was rather shocked. No, my mind could not comprehend that that these two events, the current event of 9/11 as it occurred and our previous posting on George's site, could possibly be connected. And then we started really examining it, and yeah, unfortunately, that was the case.
Cliff, now, when you analyze the internet chatter, tell me, I mean, what's going on out there in the internet world? People are communicating with each other. They're chatting back and forth. How are you picking this up?
Basically, we operate on the theory that everybody is psychic at some level, and it kind of like leaks out of their choice of language at any given moment. You might be discussing the making of bread pudding on a bread pudding forum, and for some reason you choose one set of words over another, and these words somehow leak out little bits of prescience when they're all gathered with everybody else's words that leak out little bits of the future.
And your software finds these various internet sites?
Correct. We have a seed list of about 300,000 forum. I hate that word. It's actually fora. It's
plural. Yeah.
And as a linguist, this kind of stuff really upsets me, but we'll let that pass. We have about 300,000 of these forums that we visit, and those are seeds. And if there are links in there, our little agents, our software spiders, we call them, are free to follow those links out to a certain level. And every time they find one of our key word sets, they read all the words that are around it. And they bring all this back, and we kind of boil it down into a thick, syrupy mass and skim the stuff off the top.
So like this economic mess that we're in, and I know when we all talked with both of you months ago and even years ago, you were predicting an economic calamity. I mean, it's on most, and I've gone back. I had Lex pull most of the things we've all talked about, And a lot of them talk about an economic mess, and I'll paraphrase that, and you were right on. So what were you picking up? I mean, what kinds of things did the software find in order to find this?
We work at the level of archetypes, which is to say that all words are interrelated within a given language, and they have a tendency to spawn from one another, if you will. So you have an archetype at a very top level might be fear, and you would have other words that are associated with that, such as frightened, afraid, shaky, so on and so on. And so we would collect all of these, and they would all essentially point towards fear. And so we start at the top and drill down. So we found a combination, insofar as the economic was concerned, of the archetypes of fear and familial or self economic security. And it's not really economic. It goes to wealth, and but a lot of that kind of language is archaic. But nonetheless, it is at the top level of the archetypes. So together, what we did was to say, why are all these words around fear relating to economics? And why is there a lot of language that has what we call long-term values associated with it, emotional values? And these were words that were quasi-legalistic that shouldn't be in particular areas. And we have a tendency to think of slang at one level of immediacy and legal language at the other end. So at the time we first started picking up the economic problems, we were getting more legal language than we were slang. Now we're getting more slang than we are legal language, and thus the next phase of the economic downturn is almost upon us.
I'm going to give you a kind of a strange example here, but it really points out at how what is going on that on the internet allows your software to find these. Both you, George, and Cliff, a couple weeks ago I was at a restaurant in St. Louis talking to some of my friends there, and they were talking about how slow it was in the restaurant. And we were talking about, well, is it the economy? What is it? And I said, it's too hot outside. And when it's brutal in St. Louis, it's hot and it's muggy. And people tend, in mass, to react the same way. And by that I mean, one day it's either very slow, the next day it could be packed. And nobody knows why. I happen to think, and I think your research would point this out, that the collective minds somehow are interconnected with each other, and people know in mass, I'm not going to go out tonight. It's too hot. I'm not going to go. And they all decide not to go out. Is that how your software works, Cliff?
That's basically it, is that collective feeling expressing itself through these little bits of language that leak out that are slightly out of the ordinary for that kind of a conversation. That's quite correct indeed.
It is something, George, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. In fact, to me, it's shocking sometimes. I was on the day after New Year's prediction show.
Yes.
With Ian, and one of the things that was in the forecast in January of 2008 was we're going to have this terrible bump in the economy come along about October or so, and it will be equivalent to the bond crash in 1932. And then we were on in late August, first part of September with George Knapp and saying, okay, here it comes, looks like October 8. And then in retrospect, Ben Bernanke just in the last week is saying the crisis of October 7. And it's woo-woo scary to me sometimes to have an insight into future events that far in advance with that kind of accuracy level.
Dates, I'm told, are very difficult. Events are easier to predict than the dates themselves. Cliff, would you agree with that?
That's quite correct, yes, because the event is described at an archetype level that's very broad. So, for instance, at a very top level, the times we are in we think of as being epic. That is to say, for the next 15 or 20 years, people are going to be going through stuff that later on other generations will devote monuments to. And that top level drives everything else, and it's easier to see than a specific date for the epic period to start. So it's kind of like the astrological kinds of things where, you know, are the planets really aligned on this day at this moment, or if you shifted over here, would it be ever so slightly different, that kind of a thing.
One of the things that you both predicted through the WebBot programming was a huge earthquake would hit the Pacific Northwest. And again, the dates were December 10th to the 12th of 2008. Take the dates out for a little bit. Do you still think that's going to happen?
Actually, the language was fulfilled not in the Pacific Northwest, but on the Chilean coast. So to that extent, I'm sure we're going to have very large earthquakes here, and probably very soon relative to the eclipse that's occurring today. However, the language that we had for twin quakes was actually fulfilled by quakes that occurred relative to some volcanoes along the Chilean coast. So it was the opposite end. So we were kind of accurate on the time. It was even on December 11th and 12th. We were just wrong on which end of the planet.
I see. Okay.
Sorry about it. Missed it by that much.
Yeah.
And we've missed them before in terms of specific locations. For example, I was in the Burbank area building out a recording studio in, I think it was 2005, 2006, October of that year. And we were expecting a quake in the southwest that would be of some considerable magnitude. And that was one of the reasons I left Southern California. Turned out that quake was the big Pakistan quake. And so we got our fulfillment in terms of the number of people killed, displaced, homeless.
And the latitude.
And the latitude, sure. They were both about 34 degrees north. Well, that's Burbank, but it's also where it hit in Pakistan. And so Southwest Asia, Southwest U.S., those kind of descriptors are hard to pull out.
Does the software make the prediction, or do you interpret the software and make the prediction?
I'd have to say that the data provides eye candy, if you will, within the model that attracts me to a particular area of data that's been processed. So it's probably universe drawing my attention, and then we root around in there and find out what the words mean. Why is there this data blip? So in that sense, the software certainly participates. It's not anything that we particularly generate. And we look for these data blips or bulges within the model. And because they're attractive in hue or color or intensity, we then drill down and find out what's going on. Sometimes it's not worth the trouble to have done so, but then other times it yields interesting things like the power outage in the Northeast. We had a whole ton of detail that turned out to be amazingly accurate.
Tell me, what would it say in order for you to ascertain that there's going to be a huge event, maybe a power outage? What kind of verbiage do you pick up?
What we initially saw there was the terrorism word. Now, bear in mind, this was, you know, much closer to 9/11 than we are now.
Right.
And so that popped up, and that was also accurate because everybody in the Northeast instantly thought it was due to terrorism. And we get the idea that our language tells us about the words people will use after the event, not necessarily a descriptor from on high about the event itself. So we got terrorism right off, and that drew our eyes there because I had that signified by a certain intensity in bright yellow. And then within that, it started going instantly to power loss and railroads and to the south, a particular location relative to a river. And when we have that kind of level of detail show up at our, what we call our tertiary level of support, this third layer of data that we process through, then I have a tendency to take it pretty seriously, just like we do when we get archetypes that include human body part references, this kind of thing.
One of the things about that prediction in the Northeast power outage, which was so interesting, was there was a lot of imagery related to an abandoned city. And what's curious is if you look at the switching yard of a power station, the big transformers and the gravel or the asphalt between them almost looks at an archetype level like a big city that's abandoned. And so some of the archetype images come through, but it's very hard to just doing a reverse lookup on a series of dots in three-dimensional space to look up and say, okay, how does that somehow translate to power transformer switchyard?
I find this work that you both do fascinating.
Cliff does the work.
I'm not disagreeing, George.
He's the engine, huh, George?
He's the engine. I just happen to be a lucky guy who has a little bit of news sense and can occasionally contribute some context.
You massage the results, I guess.
Well, George has also provided some interesting theorems and postulates along the way from his perspective that have, in the main, proven to be quite true. In an instance, he was the one we have this thing called the Ure postulate or George postulate, that if we see certain kinds of archetypes persistent in the data for a long period of time, basically the longer that they're there, the more meaningful the event will be when it finally arrives. And as an instance, we have had this long period of time that we had this city being driven back to the mud from which it was built. this weird kind of an archetype that eventually fleshed itself out to a description of what was going to happen to New Orleans in the Katrina instance, in the main. I mean, we're not talking detail levels, but we got that fairly well. We had the diaspora there, and that was out a long time, and I actually think that was where George developed his postulate around that particular event anyway.
The one that scares me, George, is that we have been looking at death of the dollar, gosh, what is it, 3 or 4 years now, Cliff, in the data set?
All the way back to 2003, George.
Yeah. So that's what scares me personally, because my whole website and my area of focus is long-wave economics. And when we see something coming that far in advance and have these way off the chart numbers for 2010, 2011 for gold and silver prices, and talk about hyperinflation, we can get into this later, of course. But when we see something that's been in model space for 6-7 years coming down the pike, and then we hit October of 2008, bang on, we've got some dates coming up that are just unsettling at best.
Hence, that's the reason, I guess, the shape of things to come, Cliff, in your work here. You say, weak and harder mind, don't read further, huh?
Yeah, I really don't want to pollute people's consciousness with this. If they're, for me, as a personal level, I won't ever watch a slasher film or a horror film because I just don't want those images in my head. And so I'm just giving people a chance to basically make a decision. And there are a number of people that read the disclaimer and then they ask for a refund, and that's fine with me. I have no problem with that because, you know, better they should manage their own consciousness than allow me to intrude with these rather nasty imagery.
If more than several people were involved in 9/11, beyond the terrorists and those who put it together, let's say it was a little wider, but they did not go on the internet and obviously chat about it, would your software somehow still be able to pick up on it, on other things? I mean, maybe they told some other people.
It doesn't quite work that way.
Okay.
Because we don't pick up consciousness.
It's not like the Princeton Egg Project.
Correct. And it's not like what NSA or the CIA do, or Echelon,
right,
or any of these other guys who actually care who says what to whom.
This
now,
is hard data. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's looking at the telescope or the microscope. We tend to get the very broad view, very correct, and Admiral Poindexter's folks like to drill down and find out what size socks does George Newry wear? You know, that kind of detail.
Or right? Does he even wear socks?
Uh-oh.
Right? Of course he does. Of course he does. We're going to talk a lot about the future when we get back into all of this. This is fascinating work. Cliff, once you got into it, did it shock you?
I was doomed. There was no question. In 97, I made some discoveries that I thought I was on this path to being able to sell the software to fools like George Ure, who care about what the stock market does. And then I started seeing this other stuff, and I thought, no, wait a second. None of this makes sense relative to what I told my software to go do. And I was doomed from that point on. And yes, it is extremely disturbing, and it's rough to maintain and an even strain, so to speak, on your mental attitude when you're swimming in the extreme level of language that I see here.
Well, you know, I've been a believer in precious metals for some time, but after reading The Shape of Things to Come, I'm now convinced that that's going to be a huge investment for people in the future.
It is and it isn't. I mean, it is, but it's going to be a horrific time surrounding that.
Yeah.
So
you have to know the times to pop in and out, I guess, huh?
I'm not in for timing. I'm saying that the purchase of precious metals it's a different kind of a concept than, quote, making money. We're beyond the point, actually. Our data for a couple of years now has pointed to the idea that we're shading over into what we're calling a calorie economy, and that we're now beyond the idea that money can make money on its own. Because what's actually going to occur is that the base level of our economic unit in the future, and I'm talking maybe 5 or 6 years from now, will be the calorie, excess food. And from there on, everything depends on that.
Let's get into some of the forecasting when we come back, George and Cliff, on Coast to Coast AM. And now we're going to get into the good stuff with George Ure and Cliff High as we talk about some of their forecasting with the WebBot technology. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George and Cliff, you had been forecasting a global coastal event this year, and the tides seem to be going up. What's going on in this arena?
Well, George can take that. He's been sort of tracking a bit of it.
All right.
Yeah, there has been an announcement placed on the NOAA Tides and Currents website, and it came right on schedule, by the way. We had been expecting that we'd have a prequel event, and that happened in March of this year when a group meeting in Scandinavia, a scientific group, talked about the risk of oceans rising over the next 100 years or so. But we were looking for something much more dramatic and much more apparent. And so starting during the month of June, NOAA reports that tides on the east coast of the U.S. were running anywhere from 0.6 feet to 2 feet above normal. And in the first couple of weeks of July, it had backed off a bit, up only 0.3 feet to 1 foot. But nevertheless, when you start doing the calculations on how many trillions of gallons of water that is, it's a very odd, very strange phenomenon to take place right on schedule. And we haven't seen any explanations yet as for why it's happening. Occasionally, you'll, of course, see offshore storms provide some change. You know, a low pressure or high pressure system offshore can give you some variance in sea level, and that in turn ripples through to tides, poor puns intended.
Yeah.
Sorry. But what we don't know is if this is limited to 2,000 miles of East Coast, or whether foreign stations that measure tides over long periods of time will start showing the same things. And it comes concurrent with a volcano trying to pop off in the Philippines, and also in the linguistics, there's an expectation of new lands arising off of what, cliffs South America?
Actually, Indian Ocean should be the largest. But remember, we had the large volcano off Tonga that has now created a new island, as well as that giant upthrust event in Alaska, giant by anybody's criteria, of 20 feet. And then there's that big brown blob.
Oh, and also we had the 7.8 earthquake off of the South Island of New Zealand. So
correct, yeah.
Definitely we're starting to get some planetary movement. And really the question about this global coastal phenomena is it going to be a single event, or is it going to be a stew of events? We have had in the past occasional archetypes come along that are indicative of a sequence of events that group under a single kind of an archetype. And that's what this appears to be.
You know, there's a volcano in the Canary Islands.
Near
La Palma. And
Cucumbra Viejo.
Yeah, if that goes, they predict a massive tsunami on the eastern coast of the U.S.
Yeah, that's the one which essentially washes over Florida, swamps Washington, D.C., takes out the New York Stock Exchange, and up in the hills could wash, some reports say, 1,000 feet, although there are some physics limits on how big the wave could run up. It would nevertheless be devastating to tens of millions of people.
When you see coastal events, is this something you're seeing or not?
Not specifically that instance, but large intrusions into coastal life, very definitely, on any number of fronts from any number of coastal-related criteria. So, for instance, we had initially started with a global coastal event, and then it kept getting broader, and so we called it the global coastal phenomena. And in the West Coast here, we're in the fourth year now of no oyster spawns, so from the native oysters. So we're getting all different kinds of bioreactive aspects of it. And then the sea level rise we're seeing is not catastrophic in the form of a giant tsunami. And I'm of the camp that says, regardless of the amount of pressure, all you can do is get about 180 meters maximum, still a huge wave, but you can't get 1,000 feet just simply because of the physics. But nonetheless, the intrusions are seen as being a little bit more gradual. Bear in mind that our descriptors actually showed this whole thing as a period of about 5 months, that we'd be discussing this as humans kind of got used to the idea that things are unusual on the coast. Didn't mean that it was going to stop. Our data then goes on to suggest that it's going to grow over time with a larger peak in about March or April of 2011, I think, and then it'll sort of plateau for a while from there. And it's going to get rather disturbing for a lot of people.
There's also in the very, very long-term values, Cliff, the mention of the moon moving about and some other things like that.
Yeah, correct. There is some suggestion And we're seeing some of it now as well, associated with this in the same entity, which is the Terra entity, which is the area that we model all of the things related to the planet itself, are such things as magnetic disturbances, both internal to the planet as well as within the magnetosphere. And I'm actually of the opinion that we could get a combination of those that would account for large-scale shifts in water that don't necessarily, they're not really even tidal waves or tsunamis, but rather something different. And the theory would be that we'd have a magnetic anomaly of a sufficient size. And here the other day, NASA reports that we've got a magnetic hole or a hole in the magnetosphere that's three times the size of the planet. And imagine that the moon gets over that hole. Well, the gravity of effect of the moon over that hole is going to be different than when it's around other areas that are shielded by the magnetosphere. So even something as small as that little slight difference in the moon track could cause rather erratic coastal conditions relative to waves and so forth. And they may well settle down when the moon goes back, just no way of knowing. But we'll be discussing it for a number of months as it unfolds.
I have had people, Cliff and George, talk on this program over the past 6 months talking about something impending. They feel something strange. It's weird. They can't put their finger on it, but they just sense something. Are you picking up anything?
Yeah, boy, that's a sure loaded question. Yeah. Yes, we are. The question is, what level of detail and what area of
exactly
this giant thing do you want to examine?
Is it all fronts? We'll talk about the economy. We'll talk about Iran. We'll talk about North Korea tonight and all these other aspects. But this is something, I think it's bigger. It's affecting people's ability to react with other people. It's depressing people.
This is also part of what we're calling the big squeeze. I'm sorry. It eluded my thinking here for a second. But it's our supposition from something that was in the data way back when, and I want to say 1998, I first noticed it relative to the sun, that basically what's going on is our solar system is wobbling up and down around the thin edge of the Milky Way, where there's a higher concentration of magnetics. Or as the Russians would have us understand it, we're into an area of more energetic space. There's a lot more energy there. And such philosophers as Gurdjieff and others have called it the soli lunis, and it does indeed affect us all. And what we have to do is to watch out that it doesn't affect us all into a world war, because we'll be going crazy just in reacting to circumstances without really being aware that our reactions themselves are not what would be considered normal because of this big magnetic squeeze that's going on.
See, I've seen a lot of road rage, but I'm seeing more of it. I've seen a lot of rude people. I'm seeing more rude people. It's just strange. I personally can't put my finger on it.
If you step back from it, George, and think of it as waves of energy that become more extreme and more tightly compressed, I think Art used to refer to it as the quickening.
Yes.
What we're seeing now is we're seeing more intense waves closer and closer together until the amount of change in the data for, what, Cliff, the first 3 months of next year?
Oh, yeah. Correct.
That will represent the same amount of emotional release as, say, the preceding 7 or 8 years. And then we're going to get into 3 months later, we'll be going through a compression where we'll see everything from 1999 emotionally through that big change in early 2010 occurring over a 2 or 3 month period of emotional impact. And that's going to literally make people nuts.
And let me just be real clear about this so that everybody understands. Our data seems to confirm the theories that are expressed by Terrence McKenna, as well as Mr. Kalaman and Mr. Lungold, in their own ways, because we do appear to see, as George puts it, waves of increasing pressure. And as the wave passes, you get into kind of a stabilized equilibrium for a brief period of time. And then this is what we're calling our building in emotional, our building emotional tension and release of emotional tension periods. So as we go forward in time, the pressures will get quite severe. Some of the imagery actually shows it to the point where some people, under the influence of this extra magnetism, so to speak, are walking along and just kind of like seize up, stop. They're not dead or anything. Mm-hmm. They're just momentarily paralyzed, standing up, drooling, and not necessarily sensate at all.
So over the next couple of years, generally, what are you seeing? Is it going to be tough for us?
As the toughest anybody's ever seen, so tough that people will make monuments to this time the way that, others used to make monuments, you know, to the great Roman Empire, that kind of deal.
So what we've gone through over the last 6 months or so is nothing compared to what's going to happen in the next couple of years?
It's not even the warm-up act.
Yeah, we've just put on our suit. We haven't even started to do the push-ups and start stretching our muscles yet.
In all areas, all fronts?
Correct.
Yeah, and in fact, the disappearances meme is starting just now to show up. All of the folks the cultural icons are rolling over even as we speak. I mean, we've got Farrah Fawcett passing, Billy Mays and Ed McMahon.
Walter Cronkite just left us.
Yeah, the whole list. And so
Michael Jackson, you can't forget about him.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, of course. And but to us, this is a temporal marker. We'll have more disappearances. We're still waiting for what, Cliff, the royalty types, the royal family
Correct.
Types.
And some sort of super yacht that gets involved in a Marie Celeste kind of an incident.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we had actually, again, this is prequel stuff, but much of the Air France 447 crash met some of the linguistic expectations. But once again, like in the case of the Columbia disaster, we have a very hard time linguistically separating events that happen on the ocean from events that happen with spacecraft and aircraft, because they both have crews, and there's just a lot of linguistics that are used in both places.
Explain that a little bit more. What do you mean by that?
Spaceships, marine ships, you know, transport ships, and a lot of the terminology, of course, especially in the U.S., coming from the Navy and the Air Force and the Air mm-hmm. Forces, so on, they replicate each other. So the linguistic structures for those kinds of ships prowling around on the water are replete with the same sort of language that we would see with the spaceships of all kinds.
Yeah, in fact, some aircraft and spaceships will use terms like doing so many knots, for example, as a speed reference. Well, knots are commonly used in aircraft and also commonly used in ships, but they're not the kind of thing that you use on the freeway.
And when we had the Columbia space shuttle disaster, of course, we're talking about Columbia, gem of the ocean. So there's these other archetypes there as well. It becomes something of a problem for us when you're drilling down through 10 and 20,000 words looking for differentiation. And so at some point, we're kind of like mucking around with our eyes closed and cleaning out a pond and trying to do it by feel. And, oh, yeah, I think that's a water lily I've grabbed. I'm going to haul it up.
If what we have done is merely the warm-up act for what is about to happen over the next couple of years, I'm concerned that people are at their maximum stress level already.
Oh, no, they're going to go way beyond.
How can they do it, though? How can they handle it?
A lot of them won't.
Yeah, that's the problem, all right, isn't it?
Yeah, we coined a term called muckers, and it's when people are just going to go amok. And it will be in many regards like the police used to face with people that had inhaled PCP. That is to say, the victim of this, their nerves are all shot, but they have superhuman strength, but they're not thinking, but they can focus real clearly on a single objective, so on. And that's what the mucker phenomenon is going to be like. And we've seen evidence of it with the shootings and so on, because basically it's a violent way of self-suicide that tries to take people out as you go along. We're going to see an increase in that. And that's simply a non-effective coping mechanism that gets them out of this intolerable stress that they're in. It's a very rough time for everyone.
You're going to see this massive difference between the haves and have-nots?
Correct. And it's going to get so bad that starvation is going to be a real issue, which is going to lead to a revolution from the bottom up at the same time that global corporatism is collapsing from the top down.
And you're talking worldwide or just here?
No, globally, but there will be some places that are more secure than here in the U.S. But, of course, basically what's happening is that the giant American empire is rotting out from the middle. And it's like a pumpkin that is rotted out from the middle, and pretty soon the top and the bottom are going to meet and as it collapses. And we're sort of where all the seeds and stuff used to be.
Some parts of the world, George, will not have as far to fall because they are still relatively closer to self-sufficiency. The further you are up the lifestyle
development ladder,
food chain. Yeah, I mean, it's
Cuba will be good.
Cuba actually could survive, and there may be parts of South America, which brings, of course, up the question, why are some former presidents owning land in places like, what is it, Cliff, the Altiplana down in Paraguay?
Sure. Paraguay, yeah.
Yeah.
Thousands of acres.
And areas in Siberia are going to flourish all across the northern tier.
I'm not moving to Siberia, and I don't think many other people will.
No, but they'll be feeding a large part of the populace. You have to bear in mind something, that before the Bolshevik Revolution, the single most effective food system ever created on this planet, capable of feeding the planet at the time, was the Russian system of small village farms. They exported more wheat than the planet could consume. And something close to that will arise again as temperatures change and everybody starts shifting north.
An analysis of history would suggest that that's one of the reasons that they, what we call in model space, the powers that be, likely were so supportive of the Bolsheviks, because they effectively, through collectivization, disassembled that. And once you've got scarcity, you can drive price.
Correct, and control people. And basically, we're seeing a lot of that now, expressed in such weirdnesses as the rush to vaccinate against a non-lethal man-made disease. And that brings up all kinds of issues about whether there is, in fact, let me just put it flat out. Given the amount of evidence that's out there in universe manifesting itself, as well as our data, a conclusion that could be drawn with some support behind it is that the powers that be have on their plate an agenda for the destruction of a large percentage of the populace, and it's already been in place.
I would believe that. I would believe that. We've talked about that, but you're beginning to see proof of that, aren't you?
Correct.
2012, does it come up at all? Does that show?
Yes, but we have to bear in mind that our granularity is really only good going out about 19 months. Thereafter, our data rate falls off significantly.
Why is that?
That's because when I first sat down and started assigning numeric values to emotional components of words within the English language, my concept was somewhat limited, and of the 300,000 words that I'd done, I never really extended out much beyond 4 or 5 years, and that number is very small. So, in essence, most words are more effective in the immediacy period than in the long term. When you start getting into long-term language, really you're looking at things like legal language that will affect your life for some period, rather than slang and common terms. So our language necessarily clusters towards the immediate, but at the same time, I have an inbuilt fault there, because I probably could have extended it out further, but I don't know how much more detail and value I would have gained. But we do see 2012, and we do see all kinds of problems resulting primarily from this big squeeze, the giant magnet effect.
Have you found that some areas of the internet seem to be stronger, maybe more accurate, that helps feed the web bot?
Not areas of the internet, but languages. So, for instance, there's a real mystic bent to Russian. And so within the Russian language that we've got modeled, which is relatively small, mm-hmm. given their complete lexicon, we get a lot more prescience out of that than we do out of American technical language, for instance.
It's fascinating work. But I bet sometimes when you get the data, you don't really want to look at it, do you?
Exactly so, sir. It's a question of swimming in the sewer, because it's all the negative emotions, again, an artifact of our processing. It's easier to find negative emotional psychic leaks than positive ones, and so we have a tendency to concentrate on the negative.
I'm going to next hour throw out some various topics, and you tell me, George and Cliff, if they've shown up and what they mean to all of us. So, George, give us some websites here.
Some
of the websites that you have.
Oh, my website?
Sure.
Oh, urbansurvival.com. And every morning at 8 o'clock, I do a rundown on the economy and how the House of Cards is falling today. I often say that Cliff's site, www.halfpasthuman.com, says that here's when the sky is likely to fall, and Urban Survival is the, here it comes, here's the headline that says sky is falling, and Peoplenomics, which is my subscriber site, is if the sky is going to fall, here are some steps you may wish to consider in advance.
So you just don't get hit. And we'll talk about that next hour when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.